This is the Norris Group's Real Estate Investor Radio Show, the award-winning show dedicated to thought leaders shaping the real estate industry and local experts revealing their insider tips to succeed in an ever-changing real estate market. Hosted by author, investor, and hard money lender, Bruce Norris.
Hi, thank you for joining us. Today, our special guest is Tony Alvarez. Tony is very familiar to our audience. He's been a friend since we first met somewhere around 2003 or so. Tony buys properties to mostly hold with an occasional flip mixed in, and now he's doing it in a couple of states. So Tony, welcome back to our show. Tony, we had just we had just talked about, you know, one of the most difficult things, and it's because of you're having so much fun, is at the very peak of a boom, man, everything is exciting. Everything you own, and we all kind of do it. We all have our net worth, and we're figuring it, and you're a gazillionaire, and then next month you're a double gazillionaire, and you just, it's so much fun. It's so hard to just exit that stuff. And you know, the conversation you had sort of just talked about, you were sitting there and from your perch, and you had escaped with a very large net worth, and there were other people that were in very different circumstances. And I know you're not saying that in an arrogant way at all, but that's what's at stake when we have that type of market where we have this ridiculous boom, and it's the hardest thing to exit it, but the smartest thing to exit it early instead of just, because Rosamond, you had used an example about the two homes that you built. We had built these phases out from 2000, somewhere in 2004 to 2005. The last phase was five houses. Three of the houses closed, and we got the peak price at 280-ish. And then we had two that lingered, and they lingered and lingered. And we had open houses. We have models. No one shows, right? Matter of fact, these were probably the models. Okay, so they go for 80 grand less inside of 3 months, 280 to 200. And it was over. Yeah. And I think you bought one of them for 40-something, you know.
Yeah, I was going to tell you. I wish you would have called me. I would have bought them all from you for 40.
Well, I think it kind of made sense. You'd probably have an opportunity to pick up a brand new home. You know, that's the oddest thing.
Listen, you did great construction. They make wonderful rentals.
Yeah, no, they would. Small yards.
No, I loved that market, and you're right. It wasn't about being. I actually, my heart went out to people. I even tried to convince, believe it or not, I tried to convince people, don't buy these. You know, if I liked the guys, and I like this one gentleman, Asian. I think he was Chinese at the time, and he came to see his mother. He came with his mother. Oh, you helping my son? She said. I said, I am helping him. I'm telling him, don't buy right now. You know, do you respect my opinion? I said, she says, yes, yes. And I said, well, if I'm selling, why do you want to buy? I mean, think about it. But no, they insisted, would you? And that guy lost every single house he bought from me. Every single house. He, you know, and so you don't feel good about that. I mean, who the heck can feel good about something like that? But so... Yeah, I felt like? I tell you honestly, I felt like one of the animals on Noah's Ark, okay? Like, the whole place is flooding, and you're sitting in the ark going, wow, you guys should have paid attention, you know?
you won't believe this. There's a calendar that's on my desk, and it's got a picture of two alligators on the shoreline, and Noah's Ark is already taken off, and they said, was that today?
Yeah, exactly. So I'm very grateful, and I pay attention, and I've learned over the years that the simplest things, you know, sometimes the simplest conversations, or if your mind, you know, you got to listen to your intuition as well as you do your business sense, you know. But, you know, whatever told me to go see Bruce Norris, you know, I mean, what told me to listen to Bruce is, you know, now I'm sitting with $7.2 million. I could have gotten out of there. You know, Bruce is saying stay a little bit longer, you know. You know, you had already proven yourself to be somebody whose opinion I should listen to and I should pay attention to more than my own at that point, honestly. You know, when it came to what I knew how to do the business, I knew how to buy low, sell high. I knew how to hold stuff and rent it out and pick a tenant. And I knew all of those things, and I did them better than anyone else in my market. But here's this guy with 300 houses who I helped to teach him how to do Section 8. He knows I know what I'm talking about. And I'm sitting there going, he's asking me, why is he asking me? He's asking me to do what? Is he asking, respects my opinion? And then he starts to argue with me, makes fun of me in his office. And I didn't tell you, I got no ego like that. And I said, hey, whatever you want to do. He says, I think you're crazy. This market's never going to, can you listen to these words now from an investor? This market's never going to crash like that. It's never going to happen. It's going to continue. And he starts giving me the litany of all of his reasons. And blah, blah, blah. So he was basically asking me to confirm for himself what he already believed. And like I told you once before, I once had the opportunity to meet a young developer who went from being a sales agent and within 2 years to creating a company in Arizona that became the number one company, a development company at the time, and got awarded the contract to redo all of downtown Phoenix and all this. And I got a chance to be in a room with him listening to his presentations and stuff. And when he was done, I said to him, listen, you went from being a leasing agent, basically living kind of hand-to-mouth and all this, and you created this company by he partnered up, not hired, but partnered up with the best commercial, everybody, you know, leasing agents, this, that, the other thing, from other companies, like, and they made this partnership. And I said, what's the one distinction, you know, the one thing that you did that you can credit with having the biggest impact in changing the way you do things? And without hesitation, he says, oh, that's easy, you know, I stopped listening to my own BS, and, you know, he actually said the words. And so the people in the room kind of laughed. And I didn't really respond to that with a lot of seriousness. I thought he kind of, and because then he's down the, he says, hey, meeting's over, we'll meet after lunch again or whatever. And so we walked out. So I'm in the elevator with my buddy who at the time was owned Gold's Gym, all the Gold's Gyms in Nevada and Arizona and everything. He just sold his company for $80 million. And he looks at me when the elevator door closes, just him and me, he goes, what the heck was that all about? And I said, I just wanted to know, you know, I was asking the guy again. He says, Jesus, I bring you along with me, and you start asking questions like that, you know. You get on this esoteric kick, you know. I said, no, I just wanted to know from the guy. Well, on the plane ride back, somewhere between Arizona and California, it hit me that guy had given me probably some of the best advice ever, because I had to ask myself, you know, like I asked your audience, have BS, because most of the poor decisions we make are as a result of thinking that we know everything. We don't take other people. We don't respect other people's knowledge. You know, you don't stand in front of a group like you did last month here and give out what you give out without knowing in your heart you're doing the best you can, because you've dissected every bit of. You know, that doesn't mean that there's no room that something in the market that's out of your control couldn't change and that changes things. I understand that.
Yeah.
But you know, when you go to somebody for advice, and you then listen to them. You know, you go to a doctor because you're not feeling well. You go to an attorney because you want some guidance. The last thing you want to do is start arguing with them.
Well, you know,
what's the point?
You know, what's been really interesting is that, you know, you run across people where you feel like, okay, this guy has got really pure intent. In other words, he's in front of an audience, and every time he says something, he's done what he feels is the research. And when a person like that ends up absolutely on the other side of the equation. So here I am, right, saying affordability is this, and he thinks it's hogwash. Or a percentage of foreclosures in the marketplace dictates how bad things are, and he's on the other side. It doesn't mean a thing. You know, that's the stuff where you just go, okay, well, wait a minute. Because I trust his process and his intent, I'm going to take a second look at this, because holy cow, how do you land in such a place that's so opposite of where I landed with the same criteria? I'm going to do the best I can to do the honorable thing and say, this is it, you know? And when people with that same process end on the opposite side, you really just go, okay, tell me the story, man, because I don't see how that destination is possible, but I'm willing to listen, you know? So that's been the challenge sometimes, especially, I guess I was fortunate to where what was at stake for me was my own money. You know, that's a pretty honorable cause, you know, where to put Bruce Nordis's dough in the safest place possible. So I didn't want to pretend that I brought something there, like I already knew, well, I knew interest rates, when they go up, the prices get affected a certain way. I didn't allow myself to do that. And that was a big favor. So let's say I decide to take on Florida in the way I've taken on California. I literally have to erase everything I know in California and let floor to speak to me like an appraiser. You know, you have a background as an appraiser, so that means a lot to you. In other words, let's take a look at the comps for Florida's charts and see what matters.
Right.
And
yeah, I went to Florida, you know, after speaking with you, honestly, and I went to Florida and I checked it out and I evaluated it. And I fell in love with the Florida market. But you also woke me up to the method by which you were attacking that market, or one of them. I know you use several different strategies, but one of the strategies was I hope I'm free to say this because
of course.
I heard you speak about it, but because before I don't always discuss what I see you do because I keep it to myself, to be honest, but you found some land that somebody didn't want. This is a developer guy, you know, and you found some land, and you said, hey, what can I do with this? And you went about building some single family. So I walked through all those. I mean, I went down there. I took my time. All the stuff you were doing, the way you were, what you were doing, like designing them, not only outside and inside. I mean, they're beautiful, beautiful places. So in over 50s, I think, too, you're kind of shooting for that market. And so I came back from that with, you know, the downside is I'm real involved in management all the time, so I got to pick the right management company, this and that, and you know, do I want to deal with this change? Okay, well, I really want to retire to Oregon, so but I asked, could I possibly do that there? So I went to Oregon and I started kind of duplicating your efforts that you did there. Lo and behold, I invested some, I 1031 exchanged into some existing stuff like that, but in the meantime, I started coming up with some of the single-family homes on multi-zoned lots that are like street-to-street where I can, you know, one property I bought, it's got a single-family. I paid like a fixer-upper price, mm-hmm. you know, like a regular single-family fixer-upper price, and I can build five houses. I can literally build another five houses on this, you know, cut off the original house and keep it, but I got enough lots and stuff that I can build that.
Okay.
That led me to another deal that I'm building 22 units, and the deal actually came another street-to-street lot that came with the ability to build 20. I can build 22 actual lots, plus it had three cut lots already that was parked back into another development that nobody ever finished. They had three curb cuts with the water meters already in. I mean, something I would have never looked at, okay? I would have never gone, and there I am. You know, I'm going through the process right now, hired a architect and engineer and all that kind of stuff, and I'm doing that as a reverse 1031 exchange, in case I don't know if your audience is familiar with that, but where I get to, you know, someone steps in, we, you know, tie up the property, whatever, and I have so much time to actually develop some of those and then 1031 exchange into those exact properties. So it's kind of fun, you know. I mean, it opened up my mind. I'm doing other things. It's not all that sophisticated, but I'm still in the residential thing, you know. And, you know, you asked the question about anybody who does commercial. Like when you did the talk in this past month, and you with anybody, and I started to look at some commercial stuff, but then what the hell? You said you have my sympathy or something like that, or, you know. I know you were kind of like tongue in cheek, but that, just those words, I went back and I thought, you know what? I'm going to stick to my residential stuff because that's what I've always done well with. You know, I don't want to listen to my own nonsense and get involved in other things when we all know when the market takes a hit, God forbid, all that commercial stuff takes a dive like, you know, a kamikaze plane. You know, it doesn't protect me as well as the residential. So
what
so yeah, you know, I'm still learning from you all kinds of things that you know I could have never believed that I would be doing this. I'm not a developer guy. I'm not a builder guy. And I'm not really doing any huge projects, but, you know, I'm buying a single-family home that I would buy as a fixer, but it has all this other land. By the way, both lots have a single-family on there that I'm cutting off and kept I'm keeping it as a rental.
Right.
So
that's,
you know,
interesting. And you get the lots for free. That's pretty good for me.
Yeah, yeah, basically. and I'm looking around. I looked at the agent, who's basically the same guy who does my management. The big change I had was I was able to hire a management company this time around, because I don't want to manage my own stuff anymore. I was able to find a manager in the Oregon market who's a wonderful young man, and a great family-owned business. You know, it's kind of like the Norris Group decided to open up and to be in the property management business, that kind of thing, you know. So, and, you know, it all came together. It all came together in front of me, and I thought, I can't pass this up now. You know, so he's the guy, and I remember sitting with him and saying, how is it possible that no one's bought this? And I stopped, and I felt like I just got into business. You know, like when you look around and you go, no, it can't be this easy. You know, this is too good to be true kind of thing. So yeah, that's been quite an experience, actually.
You know what was interesting is the person I thought I would rent to in Florida isn't that person. I thought I was going to be, you know, we didn't build homes that had age restriction, but I thought just the nature of the population, the odds,
right, right.
The odds were I'd be renting to retired people. Well,
yeah.
I'm renting to people that care for retired people. So nurses and even doctors are renters.
Right. I learned that lesson also, by the way. I caught that when you said it in there. Even my house in Smith River is presently rented to a husband and wife doctor. That's a huge market that I've been, you know, that I've kind of accidentally tapped into as well.
Okay. Yeah, that's funny how things work out sometimes where you go, okay, well, that's not what I thought would happen, but actually it's better. And what I've learned is that as people age, you know, go 65 to 85, the amount of caretakers grows from 2 to 7. And so this area is going to have growth in those caretakers. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, in Southern Oregon, the only thing growing faster, the earphone thing fell out. Something growing faster than the number of retirees moving into the area is the medical,
right?
The number of medical staff, you know.
Exactly.
So it's been wonderful. I just bought another house on the river, right in Grants Pass, which I've targeted for short-term rentals for nurses and doctors that come into the area that are on short-term contracts, because I get really prime money for that.
Exactly. Lancaster 2017 versus the last peak.
We're not there yet. We have, like, for example, some of the houses that I sold for $280,000, and these were like 1950s built, 3+1s, maybe 3+2s, 280, 275. Right now we're like anywhere from, in the really, really undesirable neighborhoods, maybe 180, 190 to maybe 225.
Okay.
So that's where we are right now.
Okay. Well, that's higher than I thought. Now, this is inventory. Now, how did the prices differ in this downturn when you returned to buying, let's say, in 2008 to 2010?
Yeah.
How was the price there compared to the time before that when you were buying, let's say, in the late 90s, early 2000 type thing?
To be honest, they were about the same, Bruce. I had probably more houses listed south of 40 that were actually listed that way and that sat on the market that didn't do anything. You know, anything that was coming up in the 30s was pretty much getting a lot of attention this time around. But, you know, 40s, 50s, 60s, I think we started buying when a house that went all the way down to the 30s was actually selling in the high, in the mid 50s. I wanted to be first in line, and if nothing else, in my own mind, and the rents made sense. So I thought, even if I buy these houses, pay $60,000 for them, spend 10 grand to fix them or whatever at the time, because a lot of them didn't really, they weren't major disasters or anything,
right,
like they were in the prior market, the HUD ones. But I could rent those houses out for $900 and still be under market rent at the time, you know.
How was the rent from peak to peak? So not peak to peak, but say 2005 rent compared to 2017.
Well, the rents today are higher in some parts. When I say that, like, for example, the market rents in some neighborhoods for us right now are let's say for that same house, we might be able to get $1,300, $1,350. You know, it's not going to break that, I don't think, for the 1950s built stuff. But the same house, I think the last time, honestly, I don't recall it breaking more. It was below $1,200. You know, like 11 something or 1,000 something. Or
okay.
You know, and we were happy with that. And we were, to be very frank with you, those houses we were renting in the nines. We've just recently gone through a rental increase across the board because, you know, the downside of having a little bit too much money is that you sometimes drop your attention on certain little things like, hey, could we raise our rents? Because we never raise them, you know. And because we look really to, I know I'm only going to hold them for a certain period of time, so I look for tenants that hopefully will stay as long as I want to keep that house.
Yeah,
right?
I agree with that.
So if I can get, let's say the market rent $1,100 to $1,200 for the same house, $1,150 or $1,195, whatever, I'll rent that house. I get as low as like $990 something, to attract a certain tenant.
We were just talking about, you're not really aggressive in raising rents in the sense that you're more concerned about stability and say, can somebody just stay in there for the duration? Because, rehabbing a property after people move out, that eats up a fair amount of dough.
Right, exactly. And so I'll say, I'm probably the least expensive rent for a home that's in great condition to rent. In the Antelope Valley, because I don't care about that additional $100 or whatever. And believe me, when you're talking about over 100 houses, it matters. But it, not as much as the nonsense I'd have to put up with, if I don't have the right tenant and they move out in 12 months and then I got to rehab the house two or three times, just to get an extra $100, it never really pays out, it never really makes any sense. It does to somebody who's just looking at those gross numbers and comparing, apples to apples, how much rent are you getting? And look at how much rent, which is what that guy with the 300 houses would always do to me. We'd always say, oh, how much rent do you get? And I tell him, he goes, oh, I'm getting this much more money than you. But if you look at our turnovers and we follow his evictions, it's just sheer stupidity, to be honest. So, so it was like that, you had some differences, but, and keep in mind that from 2006, or better said, from 2008, to 2017, we've had a roller coaster ride of rents. It's been up and down and over and out. I feel like I'm singing a Frank Sinatra song. But we've seen the rents capitulate, and I think at the lowest point they went to 20% below where we were, and then we saw them come up, and they've been coming up consistently. And by the way, in the Oregon market,
yes,
they're on fire.
Wow.
Absolutely on fire. I mean, when I started buying up there, a two-bedroom, a fourplex with four two-bedroom units, I was getting the rent state. The max rent they could get was maybe $700 to $800 was a top rent. We're near $1,000 right now, and with no end in sight because of the number of people that are moving into the area. There's just not enough housing.
What was the fourplex that rented for the $2,800 total? What was the price tag on that?
The regular market price tag would be like $300,000. In some cases, you might be able to get, and by the way, very little difference between some nicer ones and some older crappy ones. You might be able to get the older crappy ones for $280,000 and you have the same rent.
Huh.
And the ones that were nicer, they weren't recognizing the rents, primarily because people that owned the nicer ones and stuff had owned them for a while, And they just weren't raising rents. They were just happy to have a good tenant and, owned by mom and pop. And, they were, weren't really in the market and stuff like that. Well, when I started analyzing them, I only wanted to buy in A and B neighborhoods, A and B tenants. I changed some of my stuff as well because, when I was buying in Antelope Valley, when I started, I bought anything. And I didn't care.
Right.
And then I bought in different markets. But I listened to Mike Cantu's stuff, where he said, you want to, the stuff, the keeper stuff, you want to try to get it up to A and B and stuff like that. So I did adhere to that rule. And when I was over there buying stuff, I started going for that theory. And now I'm buying fixtures. I'm trying to do some fixtures and flips.
Yeah.
Which have become a little bit, a little bit more lucrative because the market is, there's such demands.
Tony, we are running out of time. We're running out of time again. Yeah. Hey, thanks for taking time to talk with us while you're on the train. And
it's my pleasure. And I wanted to tell you something. I'm going to break something that I said. I might do some speaking coming this year.
Okay.
Okay. Just so you know.
All right.
I might be doing some speaking for the first time. And, And it is real estate related, but it really has to do with what I see and some of the stuff that's necessary, for somebody to succeed and then hold on to that success. And the title of the first talk I'm going to do is called "Trumping the Real Estate Market in 2017."
Okay. All right. Well, let Aaron know when that's going to come about, okay?
All right. Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak with you, Bruce. It's always a pleasure.
Okay, buddy. Good talking to you.
For more information on hard money loans and upcoming events with the Norris Group, check out thenorrisgroup.com. For information on passive investing with trust deeds, visit tngtrustdeeds.com.